38. The train came to a vicious stop on the vertical face of Junction Box, the line ahead of it buckled and broken. They had just crossed the boundary where the lines of perpetual motion wheels were still turning, jarring like crazed windmills. They were spinning faster than Bella remembered from her last visit, as if the brakes had failed. She dimmed the cabin illumination and stared through the windows at the place where there had recently been a community of more than 100 people. It would have been easier if there had been no trace of it. Then at least she could have closed her mind to the remote possibility of any survivors. But something of Eddytown was still there, picked out in the harsh clarity of the train's forward headlights, a fringe of structures bordering a bowl-shaped absence. Many of the structures had been torn in half, or pancaked down as if they'd been stepped on with bullying force. Only those furthest away from the depression were in anything approaching one piece, but there was no sign of power or lighting in any of them. "I'm sorry," Bella said, aware that Svetlana was looking over her shoulder at the same grisly scene. "It doesn't look very good. That depression must be where the femtotech accident happened." "The vet was in the middle," Svetlana said numbly. Bella imagined the boiling black explosion Chromis had described, its epicenter the illegal machine in which Svetlana had tried to brew the passkey. There was no sign of any part of the memorial cube machinery now, save a fine black dust that lay at every visible surface. Bella tried to extract some thin measure of comfort from the fact that Chromis had succeeded. But Janus was still going to die. Before they left the train, Bella called Wang. He answered immediately, pushing white, sweat-matted hair out of his eyes.
"Yes, Bella.
Any progress?"
"We're still here. Something's taking shape in the vet, but don't ask me how it works or what kind of range it needs. It'll be completely useless if we can't work out how to turn it on."
"That's where I'm praying Jim will be able to help us," Bella said, hoping Wang didn't pick up on the strain in her voice. "He told me he'd return to Janus as soon as it looked as if things were going according to plan at their end."
"Return to Janus?
Just long enough for us to rendezvous with him and get as far away from here as possible. If we can have the passkey installed in a lander, ready to be carried through the skyhole, we'll at least have a shot at closing the end cap door.
Once we're all safely on the other side of it, I hope.
We may not have that luxury. The door takes a long time to close. If we wait until we've made it into the next chamber before activating it, it may not close in time to protect us when Janus goes up. So we'll have to start closing it before we arrive. For some reason that doesn't fill me with overwhelming enthusiasm." He smiled tightly. "If we time it right, we'll be able to slip through the gap before the door closes completely.
And if Janus goes up before then,
no one will ever be able to accuse us of not trying."
"I suppose that will be some consolation," Wang said, philosophically. He glanced distractedly aside. "I'd best get back to the vat. It's shaking around like an old washing machine."
"Be ready for us," Bella said. She left Wang to his work and put another call through to Nick Thale, while Svetlana and the others were cycling through the maglev single-person airlock. It took a moment for the call to find its way to him. When it did, she recognized the plaza at Underhole, where at least 100 people were being marshaled into a skyside-bound elevator.
"Give me the good news, Nick."
"The good news is that we don't have to worry about the musk dogs anymore. Their ship left an hour ago. It's on its way to the end cap door."
"Oh.
It looks as though they're in a hurry to get through." A weight descended on Bella's heart like a stone.
"They know there isn't much time, then. They've lit the fuse. They'll use their own passkey to close the door, then sit tight in the adjacent chamber until we blow a hole through the wall. Then they'll reopen the door and come back inside, along with their uncontained friends."
"I think you're right." Bella looked at the airlock. It would soon be her turn to go through, onto the spike and machinery outside.
"I was hoping you weren't going to say that. I was hoping you were going to shoot my theory down in flames."
"It gets worse, Bella. Those indications I showed you earlier, they're through the roof now. Janus is shaking itself to bits, and I don't think the accident in Eddytown helped matters. It may have stressed an already overloaded system. Any idea how long we have? If I could get the data to the fountainheads, they might be able to give us a hint, but I think it's pretty safe to say they're otherwise engaged.
The battle's still going on.
If anything, it's heated up in the last 30 minutes. The door's still open, at least. We'd be in even more trouble if it was closed."
"Wang's making progress with the vat," Bella said. I told him we'll need to get the passkey spaceborn as soon as it's brewed.
Let's hope it comes with a user manual, Thale said.
Bella signed off and cycled through the airlock. The others were waiting for her further up the line, near the point where it met the edge of the depression. Normally, the scene would have been bathed in the pastel light of the spike and symbols on the surrounding machinery, in addition to the lights of Eddytown itself. Many of the spike and structures were completely black now, except for the occasional flickering symbol. The hard floor that was the sheer face of Junction Box trembled under Bella's feet, like metal decking over an engine room. The visible lava lines flashed with hectic activity as materials were shuttled at emergency speed from one part of Janus to another. The moon was performing emergency surgery on itself. It wasn't going to work. There was no further need for Nick Thale's parameter readings. The fact that the moon was convulsing itself to death was obvious in every footstep, every glance. Bella caught up with the others, finding the going harder than she had expected. "This feels like more than 1G," she said, catching her breath. Svetlana turned the sleek form of her Chakri 5 to face Bella. Her voice rasped over the common channel. "It's heavier than when we left. My HUD says 1.5 and rising. Something's wrong with the eddy effect. That's why the wheels are turning so damned fast." They had built Eddytown here to exploit this focus of enhanced gravitational field. But now that focus was intensifying, dragging matter against the side of Junction Box. Bella suspected it wouldn't be the last good idea they'd have cause to regret by the end of the day. "I just talked to Nick. He says things are getting worse all over Janus. I don't think we have much time, Svieta." Bella looked at the huddle of ruined and deformed structures on the fringe of the crater, their outlines furred with the black ash from the dead femto machines. The heightened gravity had pulled it down like a blanket. "We'll scout the nearest buildings," she said, trying to sound more optimistic than she felt. "That should give us a clearer idea of survivors. Once we know what kind of numbers we're looking at..." "You don't think we'll find anyone?" Svetlana said bluntly. "If anyone survived, we'll find them, including Emily. She could have been at the epicenter. Or she might have made it out. We know it didn't happen instantly, Svieta. Chromis held it back for a while before it swallowed the whole town. There's still hope." But a small private voice said, "There's hope, and there's desperation." They walked to the very edge of the depression and looked down. It was a polished black bowl with no trace of former human habitation. Even the maglev line ended sharply at the rim. Bella knelt down and scooped up a handful of the black dust in her gloved palm. It seeped between her fingers like water. She had just held part of what had once been Chromis. She wondered, with a little pang of unease, if some ghostly echo of Chromis was still running in the ashes covering Eddytown. "Grav's higher again here," Svetlana said. 1.6, nudging 7. "Our suits have power assist, so we can manage. You're going to find it tougher, Bella." Bella felt the extra weight in her hip joints, a discomfort that would very soon turn into pain. For now, she blotted it out. "Good job I kept up with Axford's exercise program, then." "There's nothing on this side of the bowl," Parry said, as they edged past some ruins that were only just recognizable as having once been domes and connecting tubes. "We'll skirt the crater and check out the admin core and the public annex. That whole complex still looks pretty stable." But dead, Bella thought. Dead and cold and airless, as if it had been abandoned for 100 years. Beneath them, the ground tremored with a renewed fury. Frantic patterns of spike and symbology flashed across distant regions of the surrounding machinery, changing color and shape so quickly that they looked like neon advertisements in speeded-up movie footage of some long-vanished, long-forgotten city. They worked around the edge of the depression until they were close to the buildings Parry had identified. Bella found the going even harder, feeling with each step as if her bones were going to shatter under the load. "How heavy now?" she gasped. 1.8, Svetlana said. 1.9, Takahashi said, breathing heavily despite his power-assisted suit, nudging 2. "I'm reading 1.6, Parry, who was walking to the left of his wife, said. "Feels like a patchwork quilt. I suggest you follow my line, Bella. Between us, we should be able to plot the optimum path."
"Copy."
"It's shifting around us," Parry said. "Could be, the average is getting stronger." He glanced back at the perpetual motion array. "Wheels look to be turning even faster than when we arrived." "Then we've even less time than we thought,"
Bella said between gasps, as she did her best to follow Parry's path. They approached an armoured airlock set into the side of the nearest dome-shaped building, the door bordered with luminous, wasp-coloured stripes. The frame was buckled, sagging to one side as if a fierce gravity squall had swept over it. Svetlana reached it first, quickening her pace with the servo-assist suit.
"Looks pretty skewed," Parry warned.
The building and its airlock dated back to the very earliest days of the settlement, cobbled together from pieces of rockhopper. Svetlana brushed black dust from an instrument panel and thumbed the thick multicolored control buttons. After an agonizing interval, amber strobe lights signaled the opening of the door. It slid into its frame with a labored, jerky motion, encountering obvious resistance from the buckled structure. At least it was open. The airlock chamber was large enough to take two people in bulky suits. Bella let Parry and Svetlana through first, waiting outside with Takahashi. The outer door closed to allow air to cycle into the lock, assuming that the dome still contained any pressure. It felt like an eternity before the outer door shuffled open again. Bella wondered how many cycles the ancient mechanism would stand before it burnt out completely, freezing the door in place. When Bella and Takahashi reached the interior, it was as dark as she had feared it would be, but at least her suit was telling her that there was air pressure.
"Dome held," Parry said. "That's good. There might be some survivors after all."
Helmet flashlights activated automatically on the Chakri 5 suits. Bella had to make do with a ghostly green HUD overlay as her emergency suit, which had no light of its own, sensed its surroundings via radar and ambient light. Parry had described this building as the admin core, and now that Bella looked around, she saw evidence of business-like partitions and Spartan office furniture. Chairs had been upended, plants and ornaments tipped over and strewn across the floor, coffee cups spilled on the dark carpeting.
"Must have been a blowout somewhere in the dome," Takahashi said. "Enough to whip up a gale in here before pressure normalized. The people working here must have had time to reach safety."
"Not all of them," Parry said quietly. They followed the shaft of his helmet light until it fell on a pair of legs jutting out through the open doorframe leading into the next major room of the admin corps. Maybe a survivor, Bella thought. The person could easily have been knocked unconscious by flying debris during the blowout and abandoned here after everyone else reached safety. But when they rounded the corner and saw the rest of the body, she scrubbed any possibility of survival.
"It's Malcolm Fox," Parry said, kneeling down as best as his suit allowed.
Something invisible had crushed Fox's upper body. He looked as if he'd fallen onto concrete from a skyscraper. Both his arms were broken and twisted, glued to the carpet in unnatural positions. His head had lolled to one side, and although his face was still recognizable, the side pushed into the carpet had been squashed flat with brutal force. Blood had oozed out around the crushed skull, dark and thick as tar.
"Poor Malcolm," Takahashi said. "Maybe we..."
"He's gone," Bella said sadly. "There's nothing we can do for him. Even the fountainheads wouldn't be able to bring him back now."
"Bella's right," Parry said. "We have to leave Malcolm now."
It was only then that any of them paid any real attention to the rest of the room in which Fox had died. It was another section of the admin corps, an open plan area with seats, desks, and display media. Their lights probed darkness, falling on chaotic details. A gale had ripped through this room as well, but that was not the worst thing that had happened. Across from the dead body of Malcolm Fox, another worker remained in his seat. The strong alloy and composite chair had barely buckled, but the worker had been pressed into it with savage force. His head had rolled back, its weight twisting his neck unnaturally through 90 degrees. Bella stared in numb horror at the corpse, grateful that she did not recognize the dead man. Another victim, a woman this time, lay sprawled across a dividing barrier separating one part of the room from another. It had almost cut right through her.
"The squall must have come through this room," Parry said. "A bad one, tens of G's, maybe even hundreds. Would have been fast."
"Not fast enough," Svetlana said, pointing to another pair of bodies sprawled in broken doll formation across the carpet. "They were trying to get out."
Bella asked, "Did Emily work anywhere near this section?"
"No, not usually. But if there'd been an emergency..."
"Let's not assume the worst. There's still pressure, and we know these squalls can be very localized." Takahashi moved ahead of them through the room, placing each footstep like a man navigating a minefield. Bella understood. There could easily be a sharp gravity gradient still present in the room. Step into a pillar of 100 G's and it might as well be a landmine. Without the suit, he might have felt the currents caused by the flow of air across the pressure discontinuity. Inside the suit, all he had was the HUD warning for comfort, and the HUD would only report the gradient when he was halfway through it. He looked back, having plotted a path to the exit. "I think it's safe if you follow me. Peaks at around 2 for a meter or so back there, but if you push through it fast..." They followed him into the next room. By the time Bella crossed the threshold, she felt as if she'd walked up and down a mountain. Every muscle screamed with the effort of holding her upright against nearly twice her normal weight. Takahashi made a slow orbit of the room. "Feels okay," he said. 1.6 on average." Bella recognized the wide table and picture windows of the conference room where she had pleaded with Svetlana not to talk to the musk dogs. Some of the fittings had been ripped from the walls. The depressurization must have been most violent here, Bella judged. One person lay on the floor at the far end of the room, crushed by a closing emergency airlock door. The door had jammed hard against the body and failed to seal, leaving a 15-centimeter gap between the door and the frame. "Richard Flagg," Parry said. "Carsten, son. Jesus. He didn't need this. Not after losing Chieko." It was difficult to tell whether he'd just fallen and been pinned in place by the closing door, or whether the gravity squall had held him down first as it moved through the conference room. He'd prevented one door from closing, but the doors were always set in pairs for dual redundancy, and the second one had closed fully just beyond the heels of his shoes. "Let's see if we can get it open," Parry said. The floor shook under Bella's feet as she walked towards the jammed airlock door, the tremors now strong enough to overcome the damping field installed under the dome. Somewhere in the room they'd just left, she heard the crash of something collapsing. "We're running out of time," she said urgently. "I'm in touch with Nick," Takahashi said. "He says we can expect Star Crusader in 10 minutes. They're using Avenger to evac the other outlying communities." The floor shook again. Suddenly, 10 minutes sounded like eternity. Bella worked the manual control, but the door didn't move. "Stuck tight," she said, with what she hoped was the right note of regretful finality. Parry eased her aside gently and took hold of the door with one hand, bracing himself against the frame with the other. He applied the maximum amplified force of the Chakri 5. "Nothing," he said, panting at the effort. "It moved a little," Svetlana said. "Let me try as well. Maybe with the two of us." Bella stepped aside to let the two of them tackle the door. It looked futile, but just as they were about to give up, the door suddenly sprang open, doubling the width of the gap. Svetlana immediately tried to squeeze through, but even the sleek design of her suit was too bulky. "Almost. If we try again, squeeze another few inches out of the bastard." They tried, but this time there was no hint of further movement. The door had locked solid, jammed tight against some broken or burnt-out internal mechanism or the stress-buckled frame. "It's no good," Parry said, his chest heaving with the effort. "That's as far as she's going to go." "Then we have to double back," Svetlana said. "Leave by the lock we came in by, walk around to the rear of the public annex and come in via the freight lock." 250, 300 meters, babe, assuming we don't have to detour around eddy points. By the time we've cycled through locks, you're looking at 10-15 minutes before we're even inside. Then we'll probably need to clear the internal lock into Dome 2. "We still do it." The floor shuddered again. Parry steadied himself against the doorframe. "It's not going to happen, babe. We came to look for survivors, but we also knew there might not be any." "Don't talk as if she's already dead." "I'm not," Parry faltered. Bella heard the strain in his voice, the effort it was taking to keep it together. "I'm just saying, things are worse than we expected." "Traffic," Takahashi said, cutting across Parry. He held a hand to his helmet, a pointless but automatic gesture of concentration. "I'm hearing comm traffic, weak as hell." "You're hearing spillage from Crabtree," Bella said resignedly. "Then why didn't I hear it until we came inside?" "Someone's still alive. I knew it," Svetlana said. "Maybe," Bella allowed. "We have to get through that door," Svetlana insisted. "It's as wide as it's going to go,"
Parry said. We can't squeeze through, babe, no matter how much we want to. Then we take the long way round. At least now we know there's a reason to do it.
Takahashi still had his hand pressed against his helmet.
They can't hear me, he said, but I think I heard someone mention Batista. Sounds as if there's more than one survivor.
Batista's here, not at Kreptri,
Svetlana said. She sounded too drained for elation, but Bella could imagine her hoping and praying that Emily would be amongst the survivors. Bella looked at Takahashi.
How do they sound, Mike?
Not great. Kind of panicked, if the voices are anything to go by. But they're alive. Dead people can't panic.
Chances are they're in the holding bay by the freight lock, Svetlana said. There were good links to the other domes from that bay. They'd have been able to get there fast.
That puts them one chamber away, on the other side of the next admin section, Parry said.
Then we'd better find a way through this thing, Svetlana said. Maybe we can use something from the other room as a lever. Some furniture, maybe.
There's no need, Bella said. You can't get through in a Chakri 5, but I'm not wearing one. I should be able to squeeze through the gap pretty easily now. Parry touched her shoulder. It's good of you to suggest it, Bella, but that emergency suit's like a soap bubble. You so much as scrape it against something sharp and you're going to be sucking vacuum when that second door opens onto the freight lock. Then I'd better make sure I don't, hadn't I? The floor jogged violently. Bella felt the force of gravity notch higher, and then steady at that heightened level.
Even if you find survivors, we still have a problem, Parry said. If they'd been able to get into suits, they'd be outside by now.
Then we'd better make sure they have suits, hadn't we? Bella glared at him.
Give me a break, Boyce. Do you honestly imagine I'd let a little detail like that slip my mind?
So what's your plan? Svetlana said.
My plan is for you to form a supply chain. One of you, make it Mike, goes back to the train and starts unloading emergency suits from under the seats. There must be 30 or 40 of them at least. They're small, so you can easily carry several at a time. Just make damn sure you don't pull the activation tabs.
We'll need to bring them through the other airlock. That's going to take a lot of time if we have to cycle through it more than once, Mike said.
We know there's no one alive in this room, and there's definitely vacuum in the next room along, Bella said. That means no one's getting out of here without a suit on. I'm going to have to open this door anyway, so we'll lose nothing by opening the other lock.
Makes sense, Takahashi said.
Like all EVA people, he had a deep-rooted aversion to any kind of depressurization procedure, treating vacuum as a necessary evil that had to be endured, but definitely not encouraged.
You'd better find something to hang on to, Bella said. It's going to get a little drafty in here.
Bella squeezed gingerly through the gap and appraised her options for a safe bracing position. In the tight confines of the interior cell, she judged that she would be able to hold herself steady against the outrushing air until it vented into the adjoining admin section and either settled down or continued on into empty space. It would all depend on the nature of the blowout, which in turn would depend on the age and design of the dome.
I'll wait on this side of the door, Svetlana said. Parry can relay the suit to me from the lock if Mike relays them from the train.
Copy. What's those gradients, people? Mike, you're going to be making repeated movements between the annex and the train, so keep at least one eye on your Sheng box.
Oh, Jesus, you don't seriously think I need to worry about that as well, do you?
I doubt it, but let's not take chances, okay? I'll do the Sheng shuffle one more time, then. Bella gave them all a minute to find handholds, then started the door release procedure. It was designed to be quick enough to use in an emergency, but not so simple or fast that there was any danger of anyone tripping it accidentally or before they could be stopped. 4 heavy child-proof levers had to be pulled down in sequence, with 5-second intervals before the next one could be moved. Alarms blared and strobe lights flashed. A synthesized voice cautioned that the door was about to open onto vacuum.
"Hold tight," Bella said.
The door slid open, smoothly this time, and the gale of outrushing air seized Bella with shocking force. She trained for emergency decompression scenarios during the early days of her career, but somewhere along the line she had forgotten how bestial air could be, like an enraged animal clawing its way out of confinement. The pressure ramped all the way down to zero, her paper-thin suit puffing out again as the air inside it was allowed to expand. It was either vacuum outside or close enough not to matter.
"Still with us, Bella?" Parry asked.
"Still here. Still frosty. Gravity doesn't feel higher than in the rest of the admin core, although I'm taking things slowly."
"This is Mike," Takahashi said.
Parry and I are at the main lock. We're cycling it open now.
Good. Watch out for the lander. It should be here any minute now. Make sure they know to keep away from the eddy zones. Best if they don't come any closer than the train.
Copy, Takahashi said.
You still hearing voices, Mike?
Fainter now, but then I'm nearly outside.
I'm getting something too, Svetlana said. Like Mike says, it's weak.
If they're on reserve batteries, they're doing well to be sending any signal at all, Parry said.
Bella's suit was picking up none of the traffic Takahashi and Svetlana had tuned into, but that didn't discourage her. The emergency suit was not designed to sense a wide spread of comm frequencies. She peered through her faceplate, measuring the gloomy dimensions of the new room in the green light of her HUD. No bodies, at least. If anyone had been trapped in here when the blowout started, they'd presumably been sucked out with the air. She felt sorry for them, but she'd come to find survivors, not to trip over corpses. At the other side of the freight lock, her HUD traced the outline of another airlock door, sealed shut. She scanned around, but while there were a few open doors leading into darkness, this was the only visible lock. It had to lead into the holding bay Parry and Svetlana had talked about. Bella wished she had paid more attention to the layout of Eddy Town, but there was no point blaming herself now. Taking each step as if her bones were made of glass, she made it to the second airlock. She flipped up the indicator cover, then strained to read the feeble display. The HUD overlay made it difficult without an extra source of light from one of the other suits. There was no way to tell whether the door was holding back air or more vacuum.
"This is Bella," she said, catching each breath as if it were her last, "at the door. It's sealed tight, but I'm going to try to open it from outside."
"Better hope they have the inner door sealed," Parry said.
"If they haven't, there isn't a lot we can do for them."
Bella's hands worked the controls, her mind blotting out any possibility save the one that allowed those people to stay alive. She pushed the four heavy levers down, each one more difficult to move than the last, each five-second delay stretching to a minor eternity. It all happened in deathly silence this time. No alarm, no synthesized voice. Then the door opened. At the last minute, Bella remembered to brace against outrushing air, but there was none. The inner door was sealed and the airlock had held only vacuum.
"I'm halfway through," she said. "How are you doing with those emergency suits, Mike?"
His voice was thready. "I'm at the train, cycling aboard. Crusader's not down yet, but Nick says they're on final approach. The large-scale eddies around Junction Box have become treacherous in the last few minutes.
What's the story on the uncontained?"
"We're still getting a nice fireworks display from the end cap. I guess that means the good guys still have some mopping up to do."
Or that the good guys were getting the kicking of their lives, Bella thought. "And Wang?"
"No news, I'm afraid. Didn't want to push Nick. They're not having an easy time of it by the sound of things."
"Okay."
She realized with chagrin that she had overlooked how difficult it might be to land the ship. It was years since anyone had flown anything that large to Junction Box, an approach that would have been tricky even if the gravity fields were not lashing around like a nest of vipers.
"Are you still hearing those voices?" she asked, hardly daring to frame the question.
"Now and then. They've been a bit subdued for the last few minutes.
See if this makes any difference."
She hammered on the door.
"Nothing," Takahashi said.
Bella hammered again, as hard and regularly as she could manage. In vacuum, she heard nothing of her efforts. It was like hitting a mattress.
"How about now? Do it again."
Bella hammered until she feared that the glove would rip apart from the force.
"Talk to me, Mike." "Someone heard you, Bella. I can hear voices again."
She hammered until her fist felt bloody.
"Now?" "They're hearing it, all right. Must mean they're on the other side."
"I'm going to try cycling through. Comms might get patchy when the other door closes on me."
"We'll be waiting for you."
"Good, but don't wait too long. We may be wrong about the location of these people. They could be somewhere else in Eddytown, somewhere we can't reach, or it might just be comms spillage from Crabtree after all."
"They heard you, Bella."
"They heard something. In any case, I don't want that lander hanging around a minute longer than necessary."
Bella started the door sequence. When the outer door had sealed itself, air gushed in through floor vents. She tried raising Takahashi, but all she got was the hiss of static. He might have heard her, but she wasn't picking up his reply. Not that it mattered much now, she told herself.
Bella rested her weight against the airlock wall until the pressure climbed up to normal. Normally, the inner door would have opened automatically once equalization had been achieved, but the lock was running on a power-conserving mode. The lights had not come on, and she had to use manual controls to open the inner seal. She worked through the thick levers, the muscles in her arms aching from the effort of carrying extra weight. The door began to open, then jammed halfway. Lights stabbed into her eyes. People were crowded into a dimly lit room, some of them holding flashlights. She raised one hand, then tried to speak, hoping that they'd hear her through the helmet. "Who's there?"
"Who the hell are you?"
someone said on a falling note.
"The person who's come to rescue you. You could at least try sounding jubilant."
A face loomed from the darkness as one of them lowered a light from her face. She recognized something in the face, if not the face itself.
"Oh, hell, I'm sorry. I'm Andrew Dusson."
"Hank Dusson's son,"
Bella said. "We're completely frazzled here, when we heard knocking.
Shit, it's you, isn't it?"
Dusson turned to the other people huddled into the room. "It's Bella, Bella Lind."
"What the hell is Bella Lind doing here?"
someone else asked. "Not that we aren't grateful to be rescued." "But you were expecting someone taller?" Bella looked from face to face, recognizing some but not others. None of them was wearing suits, and most of them looked cold and scared. "We know something bad happened here. We probably have more information than you do. I need to ask something. Did Emily Barsegian make it out?"
"I'm Emily," said a voice from the back.
"Your mother and father are here. They're going to be pleased to hear you made it."
"They're here?"
"Just outside," Bella said, "and we're going to get all of you outside as soon as we can. There's a complication, though. None of you have suits, and we can't get a lander close enough to rig up a temporary docking tube."
"We're all going to die,"
someone said, voice thready with panic.
"No, you're not," Bella said quickly. "We're fetching you suits, same as the one I'm wearing. They'll be good enough to get you to the ship. I have to go back into the lock to collect them."
"How many suits?" Emily asked.
Bella looked into the face of Svetlana's daughter, seeing a world of similarity and a world of difference. Svetlana's red hair, but Parry's eyes and nose, and something in the set of her mouth, the curve of her chin, that belonged to no one but Emily herself.
"How many of you are there?"
27,
Emily said. They would already have counted heads to work out how much air and power they had to ration.
"Is there anyone anywhere else?"
"Just us. We all made our way here from different parts of Eddytown. None of us saw any other survivors on the way over."
Bella nodded sadly. "Then the suits won't be a problem." She resealed the inner door, cycled through the airlock and crossed quickly to the other dual lock, where Svetlana was waiting on the other side of the jammed door with the first batch of flat orange rectangles. She had 8 of them, stacked in her hands like a pile of library books.
"Parry's on his way with 8 more," she said, handing them over carefully.
Bella could only manage 4 of the suits at a time. They were dense with Thai nanotech, heavy as paving slabs in the local field. She put the others down at her feet to collect on the next trip. "Tell Parry we're already more than halfway there. There are only 27 survivors."
"You reached them?"
"All of them, including Emily. She's going to be okay, Sveta." Svetlana studied Bella for a long moment and then let out a gasp of pleasure and relief as the weight of all that worry was removed from her. Bella remembered how she had felt when she learned about the lock of hair in Garrison's hand. For the first time in more years than she cared to think about, she felt an empathic connection with Svetlana.
"Thank you,"
Svetlana said eventually. "I'm glad she made it. Glad all of them did. But especially Emily. She's a good kid.
She's older than I was when we were aboard Rockhopper, Bella.
We were all still kids back then, even me." The ground shook with a force that nearly upended her.
"Mike says the lander's here," Svetlana said. "I guess we'd better speed this up.
Send the word to Nick that we found survivors and we're bringing them out in suits."
"I will."
"Then tell him to send word to Wang that we're on our way back to Crabtree. If he doesn't have the passkey ready, we'll evacuate him anyway along with the last few stragglers.
And if he does have it,
I hope Jim's going to be able to show us how it works."
Bella turned to go. Through the gap, Svetlana reached out and touched the arm of her suit.
"Bella, I should be going.
Everything that's happened between us. Now isn't the best time, Sveta.
I need to say it. I just need to say that
It isn't as if I think things could ever have been any different. Bella thought about that, then nodded solemnly. Given everything I know about me and everything I know about you, I think you're right. But that doesn't mean I have to like what happened. I liked having you as my friend a lot more than having you as my enemy.
Bella stepped away from the lock, watching her footing. I know how you feel, she said.
Svetlana started to say something else. Do you think... Fetch the other suits, Sveta. We've got lives to save.
Svetlana nodded and backed away to meet Parry, who had arrived with the next batch of suits. Bella steadied herself, the load weighing heavy on her arms, and set off back to the survivors. When she reached the lock, she carried the suits inside and waited for the pressurization cycle to run again. Emily Barsegian reached in and took the first four suits as soon as the door opened.
Okay, listen carefully, Bella said. There are another 23 suits on their way. They're all identical, all good enough to keep you alive until you reach the lander. Here's how you activate them. She pulled the tab on one suit, engaging the Thai nanotech, letting it unpack from the dense orange rectangle into a suit like the one she was wearing. She showed them how to put it on, how to control its rudimentary systems. You've got more than enough air and power in one of these things, so don't worry about that. Just watch out for obstructions on the way out. We experienced pretty sharp gravity eddies getting here, so watch your step.
Guess we'd better start deciding who goes first, Emily said.
No, Bella said firmly. That's not how it's going to happen. Get four people prepped, by all means. But if we cycle you through the lock in ones and twos, it's going to take way too much time. It makes more sense to wait until I've shipped over all 27 suits, get everyone inside a suit, then blow the pressure here. You can all leave in one go.
What about the other locks? Emily asked.
There aren't any. You've got a clear run through vacuum all the way to the ship. She paused. It is a bit of a squeeze at one point, but you should all cope fine.
Thanks, Bella, Emily said.
She didn't sound keen, but at least she understood why they had to wait.
Start getting suited, Bella said. I'll be back with the next batch as quickly as I can. I won't be hanging around once I've left the last batch in the lock, so don't expect to see me again after that until we're all aboard the ship.
Where are you taking us? Emily asked.
Crabtree, Bella said, but we won't be getting out to stretch our legs.